If you're a conservative, there is no question that the major media is liberal. And in some eras, it's more liberal than others, certainly in our day. I mean, it's just not even up for debate. I mean, honestly. Well, we're going to talk about what was it like for the founding fathers of America who were charting new waters as they were trying to deal with the conflicts with Great Britain, and ultimately we ended up with a war on our hands. We're going to talk about this during this segment of Providence Forum podcast with Dr. Peter Lilbeck. I'm Jerry Newcomb. This is Vocal Point. And Dr. Lilbeck, it's great to have you on the program. Thanks so much for joining us.
It's always a joy. Dr. Newcomb, may the Lord bless your labors.
Well, thank you. And just to put things in context here, Dr. Peter Lilbeck is the founder and the president emeritus of Providence Forum, and I have the privilege now to be executive director. And it is a portion of, or it is an outreach now of D. James Kennedy Ministries. And when it comes to the founding fathers and the media, we know that there were, of course, all kinds of different newspapers. But were the newspapers in the colonies of America free to publish information, truthful information, if it somehow ran contrary to what the king or the Ministry of Parliament over in England wanted to see in print? So, Peter, let's just wax eloquent. How did the founding fathers communicate with each other?
Basically, it's a very different world than we know today. Instant communication is so possible because we have everything connected by smartphones and satellites and the internet. We can basically create our own television stations and broadcast all over the place through live streaming, etc. But back then, the only way to communicate was by word of mouth, through a town crier or personal representative, or by writing a letter, or by somehow commandeering a printing press and getting something in print, which could be a newspaper, which could be a pamphlet, or it could be a book. And, of course, with the printing press technology beginning to be well-mastered, there were printers in the United States. But under the control of the crown and under the control of the local governors, the idea that there could be a free press that could share whatever viewpoint they wanted to hold was not at all in the vision of that time. It was rather everything needed to be within the governance of the authorities that were over you or your area, your colony, your country. And so there was some latitude where people would take positions and communicate ideas, but they could easily be shut down. The printing press would be found, and they could close it down. So that theological issues that disagreed with the prevailing established church or the view of the government would be closed down and said, we need to burn the books. They're not acceptable. The ideas of finding published newspapers that took a view different from what was acceptable could be shut down, and the people who published them could be imprisoned. There are many cases of that in our colonial era. And, of course, when the Stamp Act came along, which was one of the ways that the mother country of England wanted to pay for the French and Indian War, and they said, we're going to tax the American colonists. They said, we'll do it by selling stamps that must be affixed to all published documents, including newspapers. Well, the cry that went up from that was from everyone because, one, it was making it too expensive to run a business of printing, but also they recognized that the crown had the right to put a tax on a stamp on different things, legal documents, newspapers, other broadsides that might be published. They would begin to control very powerfully what could be heard and not be heard. There was an automatic censorship that would be built in to the taxation, and the tax collector might say, I'm sorry, I can't sell you a stamp for your newspaper because we don't like your views.
Wow.
And so there was that created, if you will, that backlash that ultimately moved in the direction of America resisting the crown. The Stamp Act was repealed, but the government maintained under the king's orders, I still reserve the right to tax my people in any way I deem appropriate. So there's a whole history then in the colonies and then also under the Crown of England and the Parliament of England of controlling free access. And that was, then began the process of how can you begin to hear an alternate view? Well, very early on, for example, Paul Revere, the man who's famous for his midnight ride and his work as a silversmith, a young Huguenot exile from France. He also helped to launch a newspaper. He created the masthead that had, as I recall, a liberty pole and cap on it, the symbol of the liberty tree. And newspapers began to take alternate viewpoints where they would criticize the crown. They'd criticize the parliament. And that created, if you will, the very first beginning of a free press. And, of course, it wasn't free because if you couldn't defend your right, you couldn't get your message. Another thing that developed is that if they couldn't print fully, they established early on what they called committees of correspondence. The cities that were concerned about the religious liberties, the political liberties, the politics, and the persecutions began to organize writing of notes and messages that served, if you will, as a limited means of mass communication so that people in Boston would communicate with people in New York. And soon the Sons of Liberty groups of that were part of the Committee of Correspondence were trying to communicate many times in handwritten or single-page broadsides communications, if you will, as an alternate press so you did not hear what would often be viewed as the propaganda of the crown, the propaganda of the government, that they are trying to tell us their side of the story. And, of course, this will then create rival presses, some that are more loyalist and some that are more in favor of independence. You begin to have pamphlets that are created. The most famous, of course, is the one by Thomas Paine, where he argues in Common Sense, it's absolutely clear it's time for America to become independent and break away from the government control. Well, that was something that could have been a imprisonable or maybe even a death sentence document. But enough freedom had happened now that pamphlets begin to break out and make the case. Newspapers began to have alternate views. But everyone understood the press was absolutely essential to communicate your ideas because one person can only talk to a group of people. But when a printing press begins to multiply and it can be spread to 1,000 different locations, then people have that message on their own and they can spread it out. And so that began, if you will, the first quest for religious liberty, political liberty, and ultimately, as you know, with our Bill of Rights, when America finally establishes our Constitution as an independent nation, they will add to the First Amendment that establishes the right of free speech and, of course, the right of a free press. And that has been a hallmark of the American story. Now, we look today where we are, and that jumps quite a distant time. But one of the great mistakes I believe that our government has done in establishing the platforms for online communication is that they removed from them the obligation to be accountable for what they allow to be published, that there's no ability to critique freely an alternate. They control the platform, and they're not held accountable for what they put in there by the government. They can't be sued for it. They become, if you will, an independent channel, and because it's a private business, they are governing what is being heard. And it's unimaginable to me, but we've seen it happen in our own lifetime, that a president of the United States has been muzzled by a public arm of communication because they don't want his message to get out. That's happened right in our own lifetime. We're moving back, if you will, to what it was like in that time when the printing presses were being controlled by a force greater than the people. By then it was the government. Today it's by giant tech that is protected by the government because they have no requirements to defend themselves in the courts. They are been given an immunity. That is a monopoly of information, and it's a unholy monopoly because the propaganda of one party becomes the dominant view, and we don't have the kind of give and take. The view of religious liberty, of free speech, and of free press was that the opposites would cancel out each other and people would have the opportunity to think through what is the truth as they hear the debate. Today, we can't hear the debate. You only hear one side.
Why,
and when that
so
happens,
true.
That's dangerous.
Yeah.
So
that,
in some
yeah,
ways,
yeah.
we've returned back to our colonial era.
Yeah, only these tools are more powerful. Let me add this. You had mentioned earlier that the religious views espoused had to be in conformity with, let's say, the Church of England or, you know, the established church. Now, obviously, some of these different colonies were not established as colonies where the Church of England was the established church in that particular colony. Virginia, you had the Church of England, but Massachusetts was famously, you know, founded by the Pilgrims and the Puritans. Pennsylvania, founded by the Quakers, who then gave freedom to others. But Dr. Donald Lutz, professor from Houston University, and he's retired now, but he once did a study with Dr. Charles Heineman, and they studied, you know, what were the key documents that you find in the different writings during the founding era. And he was amazed how so many quotations came from the Bible. And he said, basically, this is what he told me one time in an interview for D. James Kennedy Ministries. And you were on that same program, One Nation Under God. And he said that, in effect, Jerry, the mass media of that day were sermons. He said sermons would be preached, and I'm talking about sermons that, you know, proclaim liberty, and, you know, Galatians 5:1 says this, and therefore the British shouldn't be doing that. And he said these sermons were printed up, let's say in Massachusetts, but they were being read in Maryland, and they were being read in Georgia, and they were going up and down the seacoast. It was almost a form of mass communications. Sermons.
No question about it. The funeral sermon, the celebration sermon, or the cry for understanding of the political dangers, and they had what were called election sermons, where preachers would preach about who's running for office and why certain decisions should be made. They were very directly involved, and that is ultimately seen, Jerry, in the chapter in our book on Washington, where Washington is a sermon collector. In his library, he had many, many of these published sermons that took various views, not only about Christian values, but also about the nature of the country and the issues of freedom. So the printing press was used for pamphlets, and one of the most important form of those pamphlets were the sermons. When sermons were powerful and well preached, a printer would ask for the right to publish them, and then they would disseminate them. So that many of the earliest, most important documents of the colonial era were sermons preached in churches and then subsequently published either in newspapers or in distinct pamphlets that circulated broadly.
Wow. Okay, we have less than 1 minute to go, but it's an interesting point about the so-called alternative media. You and I read the Bible every day, and the Bible has books or letters that were written from prison. And Martin Luther King Jr. wrote one of his most important works as a letter from prison. Comment on the alternative media.
Yeah, so in other words, we need to have the courage to get out the concern of our ideas, even if there's persecution. We have to find an avenue. And that's critical for all of us to keep saying, how do we make sure the truth will be heard? The ancient church had nothing but the ability to proclaim what it believed to be true, the good news of Jesus Christ. And the Word of God is the great alternative basis to the humanism of a culture that wants to say, we don't need God, we can live on our own without His message. So getting the Bible out, communicating truth alternatively, and yes, free speech is a goal we should have. Washington complains how hard it is to be a president when people begin to critique him in newspapers. But he recognized that free speech was one of the critical parts to balance government. And so we need to maintain that vision in a day where we see it's declining. I conclude with this line. Horace Greeley, the man who famously said, "Go West, young man, go West," he said, "It is impossible to enslave a Bible-reading public, either morally or politically or civilly." that the Bible is the great handbook of freedom. So one of the greatest things we can do is read and teach the scriptures, because it does say, you shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. Stand fast, therefore, in the liberty with which Christ has made you free. Where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is liberty. The Bible is the great gift of liberty. Proclaim liberty throughout the land to all the inhabitants thereof. Leviticus 25:10, enshrined on our Liberty Bell.
Dr. Peter Loback, thanks so much for being with us. ProvidenceForum.org for more information.